You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, Wisconsin residents could be automatically registered to vote if a new bill in the state legislature is passed by lawmakers. We'll talk to one of the bill's co-sponsors and talk to an expert about how laws like this could impact voting behavior. First, Wisconsin has the second highest rate of alcohol dependence in the nation, according to federal data. But when people seek treatment for their addiction, the level of care they can expect largely depends on where they live and how much money they make. Rich Kramer reports that in rural parts of Wisconsin, there are few treatment options, and estimates suggest that more than three quarters of those who need help don't get it.
On a crisp February night in the city of Washburn, hundreds of cross-country skiers slide past the finish line of the Book Across the Bay annual ski race. The event draws thousands of people, but a lot of them are there for the party. Inside the beer tent, a local brewer expects to sell 270 gallons of beer. 11 miles down the shore in Ashland, volunteer group Partners in Recovery is hosting an alcohol-free open house at the city's first drop-in center for those recovering from alcohol and drug addiction. Substance abuse counselor and recovering addict Jerry Seitz says many of his clients are chronically addicted to alcohol and drugs, meaning they've lost jobs or become homeless as a result. He says it can be frustrating work because of a lack of long-term residential treatment options in the region.
Sometimes I go home at night and I just feel kind of helpless and hopeless. And I know myself and my colleagues, all of us that work with the alcoholic addict, we try to do the best we can with limited resources.
That's why in 2014, the Lac du Flambeau Band of Lake Superior Chippewa broke ground on an 18-bed residential treatment center called Gakumas in Dodd. Executive Director Patty Thompson says the tribe spent millions of dollars building a 90-day treatment program for tribal and non-tribal clients they call relatives.
It can be done. This is not a project that anyone or two people or even a dozen people can do. It takes a lot of people to do this.
Counties in far northeastern Wisconsin have the state's highest density of liquor licenses per capita, but there are only two residential treatment programs in the region. For most in rural areas, weekly sessions with substance abuse counselors are the only treatment option. But even if residential facilities are available, getting coverage is difficult, especially for the state's poorest residents. That's because while Medicaid pays for treatment therapy, it doesn't cover room and board. The same goes for some private insurance in Wisconsin. The Ellie Phillips Libertas Treatment Center in Chippewa Falls offers detoxification services, a 30-day residential treatment program, and outpatient counseling. Executive Director Tony Simonson says Medicaid only pays providers 59 cents for every dollar spent on treatment options that are covered. She says that's one reason there aren't more intensive treatment centers in the state.
It doesn't make a lot of money, and typically organizations that provide health care look at health care that can make a lot of money.
In October, the Wisconsin Department of Health Services got federal approval to use Medicaid dollars for short-term residential treatment. But Simonson and county health officials said the old rules still applied this spring. Wisconsin consistently ranks near the top of states in binge drinking and alcohol use among adults, according to federal data. The state also ranks near the bottom in terms of the risk residents associate with drinking.
Alcohol is such a socially acceptable drug that people think, oh, it's just drinking.
That's Michael Malson of Lac du Flambeau. He's struggled with alcohol most of his life. After getting arrested for drunk driving in 2018, he sought help from the Gakumas in Dodd treatment facility owned by the Lac du Flambeau Band of Lake Superior Chippewa.
It's a drug. It's a sickness that you get from drinking it. And to be spiritually and truly happy, you got to get help from someone who's a professional and who's going to steer you down the right path.
A 2017 report from the Wisconsin Department of Health Services highlighted gaps in the state's treatment options for those addicted to drugs and alcohol. It estimated that 78% of people who need professional help didn't get it. That works out to around 355,000 residents. Rich Kramer, Wisconsin Public Radio.
We continue our conversation about substance abuse treatment in rural Wisconsin. Dr. Mike Miller is with us. He's a faculty member at the Addiction Medicine Fellowship Program at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. He's also a psychiatrist and addictionologist for the Rock County Drug Court Treatment Services. Dr. Miller, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank Thank you so much. Nice to be with you.
Well, we've just heard from Rich Kramer there, seeing a lack of treatment options in rural Wisconsin. Does that match up with reality as you see it?
Oh, absolutely. All sorts of services are much easier to find in high population areas. And Wisconsin has so many rural counties. And many of the rural counties of Wisconsin are relatively low socioeconomic status with a very high percentage of people on Medicaid. And some of the things referenced in your piece are accurate. There are efforts to change the Medicaid rules about residential treatment, but those haven't happened yet. Each state is having to put forth waivers applications to the federal government. There certainly is federal legislation that people have introduced, especially in light of the opiate epidemic, which has gotten everyone's attention, that would allow for the use of Medicaid funds for residential treatment. But really, long-term care is what's needed to keep addiction in remission. Anybody can go to a residential program. Of course, we know not anybody could go. That was a rhetorical statement. But having gone to 30 days of residential treatment, that's just the beginning. And it's a chronic lifelong disease, and people need ongoing care. And so it's the outpatient services that are really needed. And there's really not a lot in rural areas in Wisconsin other than in county-operated or county-funded clinics. The private sector has done very little, and it is really a tragedy that the payments for addiction services have been so low for so long. I was surprised at the clip that said that Ellie Phillips feels like they're getting 59 cents on the dollar for Medicaid services. That's probably because they offer inpatient detox, which has a better reimbursement rate than some things. Programs that don't have the hospital-based component or intensive services, I mean, some outpatient counseling services are under 20 cents on the dollar. So the reimbursement rates are so low that it's extremely difficult for programs to stay operational if they're taking care of a Medicaid or low-income population. So professional help is indeed hard to come by, which means people need to rely even more on self-help, no-cost options, which aren't really professional treatment, but they can support recovery, and that would be through Alcoholics Anonymous, Narcotics Anonymous, and such.
How much of an obstacle is just sheer distance? If someone trying to recover actually finds help, but it's a 50-mile drive each way or more, is that something that really is going to lower the odds of somebody recovering?
Well, lowering the odds, that's an interesting formulation. When people live in rural areas, they're used to not having services, and they're used to having to drive to them. You know, when I began my practice in Eau Claire 35 years ago, people would drive down from Sawyer County all the way to Eau Claire and not think that much of it. I was really impressed when I moved to Madison. People, you know, might think that a 45, 60-minute drive from north, east, or south of Madison is a long drive. But people in the southwest part of the state think nothing about a 90-minute drive into Madison because they just know that's how far you drive for various sundries, including, you know, retail, entertainment, professional services, et cetera. But, you know, your producer said this show was going to be about alcohol, which is certainly the big deal in Wisconsin, no matter how much attention goes to the opioid or methamphetamine epidemics. But when you think about opioids and what are called opioid treatment programs, people used to call them methadone clinics. There has been one that's opened in Wausau. There has been one that's opened in the Fox Valley. But until then, people were driving from Ashland to Madison for methadone treatment. So people do have to drive really unreasonable distances to get addiction care. And Representative Nygren's HOPES bills and all the legislation there has really tried to put more services into rural areas. The state is very aware that we need to enrich the service opportunities. But I think having a discussion with your listeners about alcohol is really a very germane topic because, again, so much attention is being given to opioids and methamphetamine. But alcohol is still king in Wisconsin, and culturally people say that, oh, it's not that big of a deal. If I have 10 beers a day, what's the big deal? and they don't recognize it's a problem. The national statistics are that most of the people who, according to surveys, need addiction treatment but don't get it because they think they don't need it. They just think, I can handle this myself. I don't need to see a professional. And in Wisconsin, so many people in rural areas, alcohol is so much part of the culture that it just becomes a norm to do heavy drinking, and that's why we have the highest rates of binge drinking anywhere in the United States.
Talking to Dr. Mike Miller with UW School of Medicine and Public Health, also Rock County's Drug Court Treatment Services. We're talking about addiction treatment in rural Wisconsin, including alcohol, and the lack of access that exists in many rural communities. Dr. Miller, from what you were saying just a few moments ago about the cultural problem of alcohol in Wisconsin, I see statistics showing that for youth in rural parts of the state, they have in some cases, the highest levels of particularly binge drinking. How do you start to tackle this at an early age to hopefully prevent alcoholism so you don't have to worry as much about the treatment side of things?
Well, indeed. We said for years you're not going to incarcerate your way out of this problem. You have to treat your way. And the new line is we're never going to treat our way out of it. We have to prevent our way out of it. And so to deal with the kids get tons of education in schools now on tobacco, alcohol, and other drugs. So there are school-based education, but the problem is the culture and the parents and the parents' expectations. We've made progress in the last 10 years or so with regard to what's called social host, social marketing, to let people know that if you're a social host, you serve alcohol, you're liable for it, and that parents who host graduation parties that have alcohol for kids just graduating from high school are breaking the law, and it's not a healthy standard to set. So many Wisconsin families believe it's totally fine to have a family gathering and to allow people under the legal drinking age to drink. And so this is going to take years more of concerted effort. Remember, we've been at this tobacco deal since the Surgeon General's report of 54 years ago, and we've dropped tobacco use rates down from the mid-40s to the mid-teens in adults. To deal with alcohol in Wisconsin, it's going to take a long time, and we've been at it for a long time, but letting people know what are considered unhealthy levels. And I mean, a lot of people in Wisconsin would laugh at you. They'd say, oh, you got to be kidding me. But for an adult, for the unhealthy drinking level is anything more than five drinks a day for a male under age 65 and anything over four drinks a day for a woman. And that number is what is correlated with the development of alcohol-related illnesses or injuries. We know that people will develop health problems if their average consumption gets above those kinds of levels. And so it's just, even in Wisconsin, our drunken driving laws, the first offense is a misdemeanor, and the legislature it's an ordinance right. violation. The legislature absolutely refuses to budge on alcohol taxes, which are known to produce positive results in public health with regard to reducing excessive use, and they won't budge on criminalizing a first offense drunken driving, the only state in the country. So this is absolutely culturally ingrained. And we have to be patient, but also vigilant and not give up the educational efforts.
Let's go to our callers now. Bill is with us in Buckfield. Bill, hello.
Yes. This is sort of near and dear to my heart. I have two relatives that suffer from alcoholism, and in particular, an uncle that also suffers from mental illness. And I think that one of the problems that I've seen in both cases is that the people have to voluntarily accept what is happening and go in for treatment. There, even in the mental illness case, we had no way of almost forcing him into a system that could help him. And, of course, I don't know. I would just guess that the alcoholic, the alcoholism that he was suffering from was even spinning him further into mental illness. And so it really took finally where he was homeless and arrested and put in a facility that way. And that was the only way to get him forcibly into a facility, because he had to voluntarily go in.
Bill, thanks a lot for the call and for sharing the stories you've encountered in your family a lot there, Dr. Miller. First of all, how much do people voluntarily seek help versus, as in that case, being forced to because of a legal issue?
Well, there has been research done on what's called coerced treatment for addiction, and the results are equal to or a little bit better than voluntary treatment, believe it or not. Every state has different commitment laws, and Wisconsin does have provisions for civil commitment for alcoholism, but it's very hard to do, and every county does have the option by statute. If they say, we don't have the financial resources to pay for it, you don't have to commit somebody, even if you do meet the statutory requirements of persistent alcoholism and danger to self or others. The commitment laws in the state are pretty restrictive, and you have to have evidence of imminent danger to self or others. It's not just obvious illness. You have to have the dangerousness component. So involuntary treatment is difficult. And so we've developed all sorts of technologies of how to motivate people and to get them to agree to something that they wouldn't otherwise do. A lot of the intervention methodologies are used to try to help people agree to accept treatment that everybody in their family knows they need, but they're the last ones to decide that. So what your caller mentioned is certainly relevant. And, you know, something I do want to mention before we run out of time for this segment is that there is an organization that has worked to improve treatment opportunities for people in rural areas, and it's been going on for over 35 years. Will be this year, the 35th annual. It's called the National Rural Institute on Alcohol and Drug Abuse, and it's designed for professionals. It's designed for counselors, therapists, treatment administrators, physicians, and it's held at UW Stout in Menominee, Wisconsin, and people come from all over the country, from rural communities in all 50 states, to this week-long conference. This year, it's June 23rd to 27th in Menominee, which is in Dunn County, west of Eau Claire, to the National Rural Institute. And if there's openings, people could go, I think, even as a non-professional just to learn. And certainly any therapist on the phone or people who have friends who are professionals, it's just a wonderful learning opportunity. I've had the good fortune to be on faculty on a couple of occasions, and I know the medical director for the conference quite well. And so it's a freestanding not-for-profit that uses UW Stout and Menominee as its home, and it was founded by Larry Monson, who was part of founding Ellie Phillips Treatment Center, which we heard about earlier. So it's a great educational thing, and it's one of the jewels of Wisconsin that too few people know about, and I wanted to give it a plug.
Sure. I want to bring on one more caller. We've got John with us in Janesville. John, hi. We don't have John with us in Janesville. We lost John. Well, in our last minute or so, Dr. Miller, magic wand, what is one change that could really make a difference here in Wisconsin when it comes to access to rural treatment for alcoholism?
Well, my axe to grind is that I think the private healthcare system needs to step up to the plate and not say this is up to the public safety net to fill in the gaps. I think all the major health systems in the state should be offering more addiction care, and some do and some don't. But in general, this is a health problem, and medicine hasn't treated it like one. Medicine has treated this like a social problem. So I've worked on this tirelessly through my work with national organizations. I was the president of the American Society of Addiction Medicine and founded the Wisconsin chapter. And so medicine needs to play a role, but we're still relying on public clinics and improved public funding. As you know, everybody asks for more money. But we need to have better reimbursement rates for Medicaid. We need to have better direct funding to the counties, because otherwise it's coming directly out of the property tax levy, and it's a regressive tax that way. So there's a lot of things that need to be done to expand the workforce and the treatment programs available in rural areas. I'm just glad that your program decided to highlight some of these issues this afternoon.
Dr. Miller, thanks a lot for joining us again today.
You're very, very welcome.
That's Dr. Mike Miller, an addictionologist and psychiatrist with Rock County's Drug Court Treatment Services and faculty member at the Addiction Medicine Fellowship Program that's part of UW School of Medicine and Public Health. You can look at all of WPR's reporting on alcohol in Wisconsin. You can find it online at wpr.org/alcohol. Coming up, we'll talk about a new bill in the Wisconsin legislature that would automatically register people to vote and what impact this could have in upcoming elections. We'll talk to one of the bill's co-sponsors and a political scientist, and you can tell us what you think. I'm Rob Ferret. Stick around. There's more to come on Central Time. You're listening to the Ideas Network.
From NPR News in Culver City, California, I'm Dwayne Brown. Congressional Democrats are angry about a proposal to force families of immigrants living in the country illegally out of public housing. NPR's Joel Rose tells us Housing and Urban Development Secretary Ben Carson took a grilling at a House hearing today on Capitol Hill.
Unauthorized immigrants are already ineligible for federal housing subsidies, but the proposed rule would force their families out of public housing too, including 55,000 children who are U.S. citizens or legal residents. Democrats, including Representative Carolyn Maloney of New York, are outraged.
Mr. Secretary, the D in HUD does not stand for deportation.
But HUD Secretary Ben Carson says there's a long waiting list for public housing.
There are hundreds of thousands of children, as well as elderly and disabled people on the waiting list who are legal American citizens.
Under the rule, Carson says people would have 18 months to move out. Joel Rose, NPR News, Washington.
The Secretary of State and other top Trump administration officials briefed Congress behind closed doors today about increasing tensions with Iran. Acting Defense Secretary Patrick Shanahan says the threat from Iran against U.S. allies and interests remains high, but any direct attacks on Americans had been put on hold. Democrat Adam Smith is the chairman of the House Armed Services Committee.
There was a lot of talk in the briefing about how there's a huge risk of Iran miscalculating, you know, striking in a way that gets a response they didn't anticipate. I think there's risk for miscalculation on both sides, and that remains my biggest concern.
U.S. officials say they suspect Iran was behind the recent sabotage of oil tankers in the Persian Gulf, as well as attacks on a Saudi pipeline, but the intelligence is far from definitive. Stocks finished higher on Wall Street today. You're listening to NPR News.
It's 4:32. This is news from Wisconsin Public Radio. Good afternoon. I'm Brady Carlson. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service says it detected environmental DNA for the invasive Asian carp during its annual spring sampling in April. As Daniel Kading reports, the findings were made in Illinois' Lake Calumet, about 5 miles from Lake Michigan.
The agency says 4 samples yielded 6 positive hits for traces of silver and bighead carp. Acting Regional Director Charlie Woolley says it's unusual to see so many positives in one sampling event. He says the findings prompted a follow-up search for the fish last week.
And the good news is we did not find any.
Woolley says it's possible boats may have carried their DNA upstream. The agency will do more extensive sampling in June. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers has proposed adding another barrier at the Brandon Road Lock and Dam in Illinois to prevent Asian carp from spreading into the Great Lakes. That project could cost around $831 million. A Corps spokesman says the Chief of Engineers may sign and release a final report on its recommended plan yet this week. Daniel Kading, Wisconsin Public Radio.
U.S. Representative Mark Pocan of Wisconsin is calling for an impeachment inquiry against President Trump, as Shemaine Mills reports.
The Madison Democrat says the president has shown continued disrespect for the Constitution. And according to NPR, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi will be calling a meeting Wednesday to hear from Democrats whether to move forward with impeachment. It's an issue that has divided Democrats, but Congressman Pocan said in a statement Tuesday morning, the president's most recent actions are forcing us down this road. Pocan said President Trump has been stonewalling on information needed to determine whether Russia interfered in U.S. elections. Representative Gwen Moore has previously called for members to consider impeachment. However, other members of Wisconsin's congressional delegation did not respond to requests for comment. Shamine Mills, Wisconsin Public Radio.
A key Republican leader on the legislature's finance committee says Governor Tony Evers' plan to add new barracks at two Wisconsin prisons isn't dead. Evers' state budget calls for borrowing $15 million to build three new 144-bed barracks at Jackson Correctional Institution in Black River Falls and one at Tichita Correctional Institution in Fond du Lac to help alleviate overcrowding. The finance committee is revising the budget before passing it on to the full legislature. Republicans removed the barracks proposal from the spending plan, but Representative John Nygren, one of the committee's co-chairs, tells reporters it may take up the barracks as part of the state's capital budget. This is WPR.
Wisconsin Public Radio is a service of the Wisconsin Educational Communications Board and the University of Wisconsin-Madison, with additional financial support from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and from listeners through the Wisconsin Public Radio Association. Support also comes from The Wine and Hop Shop, Madison's home brewing and winemaking headquarters for more than 40 years, featuring starter kits, classes, gift ideas, and more, on Monroe Street and at wineandhop.com.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. A new bill introduced by state lawmakers would automatically register people in Wisconsin to vote. The initiative was originally included in Governor Tony Evers' budget, but it was removed by state Republican lawmakers. Now it's being introduced by Democrats as standalone legislation. If it were to pass, Wisconsin would join 16 other states that already have automatic voter registration on the books. Coming up in a few minutes, we'll talk to a political scientist about how the law could impact elections here in the state. First, Representative David Crawley joins us. He is a Democrat representing Wisconsin's 17th Assembly District, which includes Milwaukee. He's a co-sponsor of the legislation. Representative Crawley, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Well, why did you want to co-sponsor this bill on automatic voter registration?
Well, one thing that we do know is that Wisconsin has had a proud tradition of a robust civic engagement and electoral participation. And over the past decade, we have seen many bills that would stifle people's ability to vote. So with the new incoming governor and with the change in leadership, we feel that it is needed that we streamline this process and make it easier for folks to vote. And that's why I'm one of the authors of this bill.
How exactly would this work? What would voters see?
Well, basically, any time a voter interacts with an eligible voter is interacting with the Department of Transportation, whether that's getting their ID card, driver's license, registering their vehicle, they will be able to basically have their systems be able to talk to the Election Commission, who already has a list of all the eligible voters, and be able to match that up with DOT information and automatically enroll people to vote.
And one concern I've seen is, okay, what if somebody who isn't supposed to vote in Wisconsin, say a legal immigrant, but someone who can vote, how do we make sure they don't end up being on the voter list?
Well, the one thing is that, you know, the fact that these are two government agencies, they will basically be able to cross-reference one another. So by actually having automatic voter registration, we can actually reduce any type of fraud that anybody may think is out there. But more importantly, this improves the transparency, but also the accountability when it comes down to our elections. It's important that we make things easier for those who are eligible to vote. And I want to be clear, this is not an issue. It's not going to be an issue. And we've seen both Democratic states and Republican states across the country instill automatic voter registration on their statutes.
That said, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, a Republican, points out, hey, we've already got same-day voter registration, and that makes it pretty easy to register to vote already. We can do it online. So why do we need this extra layer of easing the registration process?
Well, we wouldn't be the first state that has same-day registration to actually have automatic voter registration. I think there's about 10 other states, including the District of Columbia, that currently has this. And so we just want to streamline the process again. But having same-day registration, it would just work as a stopgap, as a solution to solve errors in our process. So, you know, this gives us a chance to fix inaccuracies on the day of, reduce provisional ballots, things of that nature. So this is actually going to strengthen our voting process. It won't hinder it. We need to be able to streamline this process for every eligible voter in Wisconsin, and that's the goal.
Are you hopeful that this would, if this were put into law, increase voter turnout?
Oh, absolutely. The goal is to encourage full participation in our electoral process. You know, we want to make sure that government is representative of the people and people takes advantage of our democracy and really get involved.
As we wrap up, this was in Governor Evers' budget. It's been taken out now by the Joint Finance Committee. Are you hopeful that you can get enough Republican support on board to actually make this happen?
Well, at the end of the day, we're going to do our best to talk to every Republican in the House and in the Senate. But I think that what we've seen from Republican leadership, particularly with Voss and Fitzgerald, that they've really tied the hands of many Republicans. And so as we talk about automatic voter registration or are we talking about Medicaid expansion, we need to make sure that we're reaching out to everybody and making sure that we get people on the record really saying where they are, where their position is. And so I'm looking forward to passing this bill, and I'm looking forward to this being a bipartisan effort because we know that we need that to happen in this state of Wisconsin.
Representative Crowley, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
That was Representative David Crowley, a Democrat representing Wisconsin's 17th Assembly District, which includes Milwaukee. He's co-sponsor of new legislation that would automatically register Wisconsin residents to vote unless they opt out. Now we continue our conversation about automatic voter registration and how the state's proposed laws could impact future elections if it's passed. You can join in with your thoughts at 800-642-1234. Do you want to see this happen in Wisconsin, this automatic voter registration? Call now at 800-642-1234. Philip Chen is an assistant professor of political science at Beloit College. Phil, welcome back to Central Time.
Happy to be here. Thanks.
Well, last time we talked to you, I think this was still in the budget.
It was.
Were you surprised to see it removed as the legislature picked apart Governor Evers' budget plan?
Truthfully, no. This wasn't going to be a priority of the Republican leadership. And it has become, through both a national conversation and through the state conversation, a Democratic talking point. And so it's not particularly surprising to see it taken out of the budget.
Representative Crowley mentioned he's seen this happen in Democratic and Republican states. Are there states around the country that have been more Republican-leaning that have passed this?
Yeah, absolutely. Georgia has automatic voter registration. I'm trying to think of some of the other ones. You know, it is very much more common in Democratic states, but for the most part, it has been when it's gotten bipartisan support has been passed in both Democratic and Republican states.
Now, I know the numbers tend to show when states do this, more people get registered to vote, which makes sense. They're automatically registered unless they say no. Do we know yet if it's affected voter turnout, people actually voting?
You know, there's a little bit of research done on it, and the truth is it's pretty inconclusive. The fact of the matter is that the act of voting takes a lot more commitment than the act of registering, right? And so registering is often sort of that hurdle that keeps some people from voting. For the most part, what automatic voter registration can do is it can clean up some of the inaccuracies that might, as Representative Crowley was mentioning, inaccuracies with perhaps address changes or things like that, or reductions in provisional ballots. But ultimately, we don't see a lot of evidence one way or the other as to the turnout effects of something like this. It doesn't necessarily mean that it's a bad idea. We would like to see people register to vote if they choose to vote, but there just hasn't been that much research done on the effects of automatic voter registration on turnout.
Now, we mentioned Republican Assembly Speaker Robin Voss. He said in a statement that the bill is, quote, a solution looking for a problem. It's easy to register to vote in the state of Wisconsin. Our state recently implemented online voting registration. So given that you can do same day, you can do online, does having automatic registration really make that much difference?
I think the question is, does it increase overall registration numbers? Because the question, of course, is if you make it easy to vote or easy to register, if those are sufficient, then you would not see an increase from the implementation of automatic voter registration. In states across the country, that's not the case. We've seen much higher levels of voter registration when automatic voter registration isn't put in place. And so in some sense, that while all of those are available and probably good things to make it easier for people to register to vote, it doesn't accomplish the same action as automatic voter registration, because people have still have to have internet access, have to know that they need to register ahead of time, have to have the proper documentation if they're going to register same day, all of the different things that go into that. Whereas so much of that is handled ahead of time through the system that automatic voter registration tries to solve.
Has this been a growing trend around the country, automatic voter registration?
It has. I think you've seen states, Oregon was the first to implement it. And then we've just seen kind of a steady implementation across other states. Like you said, 16, I think, total states now have implemented it. And again, it's a growing trend. I think we'll probably continue to see aspects like this, and we'll see sort of fits and starts that eventually get us to hire more states implementing this.
We invited our callers to weigh in on automatic voter registration at 800-642-1234. Let's go to Emma now in Woodruff. Emma, hi.
Hi.
Hi, what do you think?
I think that it's very important that we offer more ways for people to register, and I think that automatic voter registration is very important. Yeah.
So you think we should do it here in Wisconsin?
Yes.
All right. Thanks for calling in, Emma. Do we know, has anybody polled on do people want automatic voter registration?
You know, I haven't seen any polls on this. You know, traditionally, election security and election access, voting access bills and proposals tend to be pretty popular. People generally like things that, you know, they like the spirit of democracy and they like the idea that people can have more access. So while I haven't seen polls specifically on automatic voter registration, things of this nature tend to be fairly popular, but not necessarily because of the substance of the proposal, but from the sort of
the feel,
symbolic aspect of increasing access to democracy.
Thanks a lot for that call, Emma, at 800-642-1234. We're talking to Philip Chen, assistant professor of political science at Beloit College. He's with us to talk about the latest automatic voter registration proposal in the state assembly, how it might affect future elections if it passes. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a question about automatic voter registration? Do you like the idea or are you opposed to it? What would you like to see change with the state's voting laws, if anything? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or tweet us at Central Time WPR. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time.
Hey, y'all, Mary Gaucher here. I'm coming to Wisconsin on June 7th to celebrate the 40th birthday of Simply Folk. I'm sharing the bill with my fellow Grammy nominee, Dom Flemons. It's going to be a great night. You can get tickets at WPR.org/presents. Looking forward to it.
Support for WPR comes from All Energy Solar, full-service solar installers dedicated to making it easy and economical to achieve energy independence. Details on home and business solar options are at allenergysolar.com. Support also comes from Epic in Madison, working to improve healthcare quality and safety worldwide with their electronic health record software. More information and career opportunities at epic.com.
This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation now about automatic voter registration and how it might impact future elections in Wisconsin. There's a bill in the legislature that would make it happen in Wisconsin. Not a done deal yet, though. Philip Chen is with us, assistant professor of political science at Beloit College. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of this idea? Do you think Wisconsin should change its voting laws to allow automatic voter registration? Why or why not? Do you have other thoughts on access to voting, voter ID, or other issues related to how we get to vote here in the state? Call 800-642-1234. We'll go to your calls now. Kevin is with us in Janesville. Kevin, hi.
Hi, good afternoon. This sounds like a very progressive
voter-friendly idea. My fear is that the conservatives may balk against it. And another thought, has any consideration been given to getting out to high school twice a year to get these recent 18-year-olds, like March 15th and September 15th, and get them registered for voting? I'll take it off the air. Thanks much.
Kevin, thanks a lot for that call. So, Kevin, first of all, he likes the idea, but concerned, does this face big obstacles in the legislature, Phil?
Oh, I think absolutely. I mean, I think when you look at the comments that Speaker Voss had about this, I don't think, given the Republican control of both the Assembly and the Senate, I don't think we'll see a lot of movement on this, at least in this session, simply because the Republican leadership doesn't seem to prioritize it. Even if they aren't necessarily outwardly opposed to it, it just doesn't seem to be a priority for them. So, yeah, I don't think we'll see much movement on it, but I could be wrong.
He also mentioned outreach to high school students who cross that 18-year threshold in time for Election Day. I don't think there's probably any formal state-run effort to do that.
I don't think there's any formal state-run effort, but there's often groups that do that. I think some, you know, the League of Women Voters or some of these sort of nonpartisan voter registration groups will often do some kind of outreach like that, and or you know, hand out registration cards. You know, there's lots of things like that that can happen, and I think do in some high schools.
And local efforts are better. I remember there was confusion in one election because in some states, if you're old enough to vote in a general election, you can then vote in the primary election even if you haven't hit that age. That is not true in Wisconsin, and I know that led to some confusion.
Right. So there's some confusion there, and then, you know, you don't want to register people to vote. You can't register them too early because if there's a municipal election and they're not going to turn 18 until the general election. Mm-hmm. So there's some funny timing issues with it. But it's still, you know, it's still possible. And the easiest way around that often is to only register high school students who have actually turned 18.
Thanks a lot for the call. We'll go down to Nancy with us in Sheldon. Nancy, hello.
Hello.
Hi. What did you want to bring up, Nancy?
Well, you know what? This is the first year I haven't worked on the election in a long time. Not in a long time. Last year I did. We have same-day registration. If it's for the presidential election, no matter what election it is, we just got our small township here, and people, they turn 18. They just bring in the same day that the voting takes place. They register and they vote.
So it works just fine, you think?
Oh, absolutely, because, you know, one of the reasons why it probably is a big hindrance is because when the day that you vote, everybody knows what day, the second November, the first week in November, the voting takes place, and there's people at the polls wherever you live, so you go there that day. You don't have to worry about trying to figure out where you're going to go and register.
And gotcha, Nancy. We just have a minute left. Thank you so much for sharing your firsthand experience there. Just in our last minute, Phil, even if Wisconsin doesn't do this year, do you think that more dominoes will fall in other states and maybe here eventually in Wisconsin on this?
You know, it's hard to say. It has been a priority and an increasing priority of the National Democratic Party, even though it's likely not going to pass constitutional muster at the national level. At the state level, I think you're seeing a lot of pushes for this. The National Conference of state legislatures has put out a lot of information on this. So there is some increasing movement. And the fact that you're seeing it in both Democratic and Republican controlled states, my guess is we will see more and more states implementing this, even if it doesn't happen in Wisconsin right now.
We'll leave it there for now. Phil, thanks a lot for joining us.
Anytime.
Philip Chen is an assistant professor of political science at Beloit College. He joined us to talk about a proposed automatic voter registration bill, by state Democratic lawmakers and how, if it were passed, which it may not be, how it might impact voting behavior and future elections.